Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, this is Stephen Lewis, and you are listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by Psychic Access. In a moment, we're going to have Celeste Oliver to join us, but first I would like to introduce Nona Marie. Hi, Nona, how are you?
I'm wonderful, and how are you?
I'm doing well tonight, and we're really glad to have you here. Can you talk a little bit about what you do over at PsychicAccess.com?
I do readings. don't usually use tools, don't need to use tools, and I don't know what else to say about that. I've been with Psychic Access for a couple of years, and it's been wonderful.
Oh, well, we're very glad to have you here tonight. We hope you enjoy tonight's topic on spirit orbs.
I can't wait. Thank you.
Sure. Steve, how are you doing this evening?
Extremely well. Thank you, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. A little nervous. We have a big storm coming our way here. Unfortunately, I wanted to come on the show and say hi and welcome everybody warmly. And we do have an awesome show in store for everyone tonight. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Spirit orbs. Extremely interesting.
Looks great. Yeah.
Well, our guest tonight is Celeste Oliver. Right, Steve, you actually have some, you've dealt with Celeste before or talked to her.
Yes, I'm really excited that we have Celeste back with us, Steve. And as you said, we'll be speaking about spirit orbs. But let me give you all a little bit of information about Celeste. Celeste Oliver is a spiritualist psychic medium, and she specializes in psychometry as well as readings from photographs. She also excels at remote viewing. And she discovered in 2010, thanks to the fantastic teaching of South African psychic medium Lee Van Zyl of the Montclair Psychic School, that she too can make contact with the past. Her great-great-aunts were the famous Fox sisters, the founders of modern spiritualism, and they paved the way for legitimate psychic mediums such as Celeste to comfort the grieving, educate the skeptical, and prove that energy is never destroyed. It really just changes form. Now, the story of Leah, Maggie, and Kate Fox and the Fox family is an historic yet tragic one. It's also a very interesting part of American history. And Celeste feels that her purpose is to carry on the energy that they started by giving honest readings to those truly interested in what lies beyond our fingertips. She also wishes to pay homage to these remarkable women who accidentally discovered that they could communicate with the deceased, and prove that the soul does indeed live on. If you would like more information about Celeste, please visit her website. It's CelesteOliver-ThePsychicFox.com. Well, Celeste, welcome to our show.
Hey, Steve. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you back with us, Celeste. We're very excited that you're joining us again, and we're extremely interested to hear all about spirit orbs.
Well, I'm just as excited to speak about them, since there's something that I found to be quite addicting once I started taking pictures of them.
I actually have a neighbor that...
I appreciate you having me back on again. I know it's been a couple of years, and I enjoyed it so much before, so it's nice to be speaking with you, dear.
It's great to have you with us again, Celeste. We're really pleased, and we're interested to ask you all about spirit orbs. Can I ask you, first of all, what a spirit orb is?
Well, to me, a spirit orb is, as you said in the intro, energy which has changed. When someone has passed, the energy that is their soul, their spirit, leave their body. And I always give the analogy of a sock puppet. You know, you put your hand inside a sock puppet and suddenly it becomes animated and has that energy and people talk to it and relate to it. But when you pull your hand out of the sock puppet and it lays there on the table, it's like your body after you pass. Your energy has gone elsewhere, you know, but the body or the sock puppet just lays limp. So I liken it to the energy having left the body and gone into what seems to be the easiest form to take, which is a sphere. You know, you look at so many things in nature, in the universe, they're the form of a circle or a sphere. So I feel that that energy then coalesces into that and just carries on. And I have what I believe to be proof of when my dear mother passed last October. That afternoon I came home and there's this great big orb here in the kitchen, the lights of which I'd never seen before. And I knew it was her. I just felt calm that I just knew she was still with me. So her energy changed from what it was in the hospital to now something new and free and just excited to be free of her body, and here it was still with me.
I think that at the end of life, when we're in physical decline, it must be a relief to leave the body.
Oh, definitely. And she was aware of that, and I made her aware of what would happen. That morning, I actually put on some nature sounds on the cell phone and put it on the pillow and opened up her chakras. I closed down her root chakra. I said, you don't need it anymore. You don't need to be tied to the earth. You know, and I went through what the other ones did for her in her lifetime, and I opened up her crown chakra, and I said, this is how you're going to leave. You're going to go out through here, and it's okay. You know, you're free to go. Just wait till my brother gets there, but, you know, and a couple hours later, she was gone. But I felt that immediately the energy in the room changed, that it almost got lighter because she was free of the burdens of a body which no longer worked for her.
It's wonderful. It's a great story. Well, going back to the spirit orb, Celeste,
yes.
I'm interested to ask you whether they're related to ectoplasm or other manifestations of spirit.
Well, what I've been learning is that everything in the universe is energy. We've all been created from energy, you know, call it the Big Bang, whatever. Everything is energy in one form or another. Ectoplasm is its own kind of energy. A spirit orb, to me, is very closely related to ectoplasm. And I really kind of look at the two almost being, you know, like siblings in a family.
Okay, and do you know why they permit themselves to be photographed? Is it their way of reaching out to us, of showing us that they are present?
In many cases, like when I was saying, when I got home from the hospital and I just got, you know, this little voice of, get the camera, take some pictures. And there's, I said, you know, it's this large, gorgeous orb. And the same type had shown up for several months afterwards, and I always felt it was her. And it seems that when you take photographs with the intention of wanting to photograph an orb, if someone is in the vicinity, they will show up. Another example is Christmas Eve. When I came home from church, I looked at the photo on, you know, the china cabinet. I have a page on my website of orb photos, and I have it there where I'm saying, okay, Mom, you know, it's not the same without you, but I know you're here. Merry Christmas. And I started taking pictures, and there is this great big orb over her photograph on Christmas Eve. The next morning, I said, well, Merry Christmas. You know, something again told me to aim the camera towards my front door, and then I got a nice streak in motion, which I felt was her responding to my wanting to, you know, greet her. So when you have the intention, I do believe that they're more likely to be there, especially with someone you know. But I have gone to different venues just with the intention of seeing whatever shows up And sometimes it's quite surprising, you know, that I will find an orb over one person in a crowd or, you know, in a historic building. They're good for a lot of them, too.
Are they always benevolent, Celeste?
I'm sorry?
Are they always benevolent, or can harmful spirits manifest as orbs?
You know, if you talk about harmful spirits, I have the books by Dr. Michael Newton, which I found really helpful to my mediumship and really quite enlightening. And this guy should give me a commission because I have told more people about his books. I've bought about 9 or 10 of them now and given them all away. I finally have a copy here, which I swear is going to be for myself. And he said that we all, when we are created as spirit, have the choice, you know. When someone talks about a malevolent spirit, yes, some spirits do have the choice to not be quite so nice to others on Earth or, you know, in their realm, but will they harm you? No, because everything is created with love. You know, the however you want to speak of God, you know, the source, you know, he who made all, everything is created with love. So the whole idea, according to what Dr. Newton has found, is that having a quote, malevolent spirit doesn't really quite jive because they're all really with that love energy initially, and they cannot harm you. You know, humans have been programmed to think of things in terms of good and evil, and I believe it's a lot of programming through the years of various religions to, in a way, have control over the masses, just to scare somebody to follow their line. People nowadays are becoming more aware of the choice and being more open to expanding their knowledge of metaphysics, of the universe, of things that we didn't dare mention, you know, 100 years ago. And that's why the Fox sisters were so controversial, because they brought up again in an age of open communication something that people for many years were afraid to mention. You know, otherwise they would have been burned at the stake.
Well, can you tell us, Celeste, about some tips or the best way of sighting spirit orbs for our listeners that want to actually see some orbs?
Well, oddly enough, the less expensive a digital camera that you have, the more you're going to capture orbs. It seems that the more expensive, more sophisticated cameras are programmed to filter out dust and things like orbs. They don't capture them as well. A friend of mine, before he moved last year, gave me this little Casio. It's a very slimline type of camera. Nothing really expensive. And I get all kinds of orbs on this thing. I bought myself a $300 Nikon a few months ago, and it hardly gets anything. So I just use a little Casio, you know, which maybe cost Dave $100, and I get them like crazy. So you don't need high-tech equipment, but a digital camera is more useful than, you know, now you can't even use film anymore. But people were noticing when digitals became so popular that they were capturing more orbs with them. I just find that, again, you know, having the intention or going to a place that you know has spirit activity seems to help a lot. Although a year or so ago, I was outside photographing the full moon on Halloween. And when I got in and put the chip into the computer and looked, there's an orb outdoors by the pine tree, you know, so they can be anywhere.
And is there a better time of day to capture orbs?
Well, nighttime seems to be easier. I liken it to where people say that the veil between the planes gets thinner, you know, later at night. Although I have taken some during the day, but I tend to you know, get more in the evening. I do notice that. You know, that's just when I start to think about taking them, too. You know, you get busy doing other things during the day. But, you know, if you're on a tour somewhere and it's daytime and you're in a building and, you know, it's historic, you know, there's a lot of energy there, you'll get something.
And do they prefer a certain type of geography or environment?
I don't think so. Like I said, I found one that was outdoors, you know, on Halloween, out in my yard. I've gotten them all kinds of places. One thing that I do believe with orbs as well as, you know, with spirit in general, what I learned is because of the energy that's used by spirit to manifest, you know, when I'm doing a reading, I tend to get goosebumps and tingles. And they're drawing that energy from me. You know, it's like where people say, you know, walk into a room and you get this cold blast. Well, they're taking heat from you, your energy, to, you know, help manifest. And it just seems that they like to be around more energy. You're not going to find too much in a graveyard because there's no energy going on there. You're going to find it at, you know, sports games, you know, bars, crowded bars, places where there are a lot of people, and there's thus a lot of energy.
So they are in effect using or drawing from the energy of humans to manifest themselves.
In many ways. Now, where I had worked previously, there was a lot of energy around the lights, way up in the ceiling. You know, it used to be the old steel mill in my area here. So you had these large incandescent lights up in the ceiling, and there were times in the one bay that I would go, say, on my lunch break and just start taking pictures, and I would find a lot up by the lights or by the electrical control panels. So I believe that, you know, they like to hang near where there is definite energy. But like I said, I have found, too, that they can really come anywhere, but it makes more sense that you're going to find them more in a crowd. There was a going away party. Speaking of bars, there was a going away party for someone from work, and I went and took pictures and was shocked a few days later when I got back into the office and popped the chip into the computer how many orbs there were around the person who was leaving and others in the bar. And all I was doing was taking in photos of a goodbye party. I didn't even have the intention of trying to catch any orbs, but they showed up there.
Well, can we tell from the orbs some of the characteristics of the spirit or person that it represents?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because according to Dr. Michael Newton's books, a spirit, when we're created newly, is white, starts out white. And then it goes to yellow and pink and, you know, shades of light blue and, you know, darker as they evolve more, as spirits, you know, grow, okay? So a newbie is white. Someone very advanced is like a deep violet. And it's kind of like your chakras, you know, as you move up in the human chakras, you know, as you become more enlightened, you know, then they go from blue for your throat and indigo for your third eye and violet for the crown and beyond. But the energy that, you know, they have does reflect on the personality, I believe, from before. A person, however, could be really an old soul and a very advanced spirit, but could have chosen to live a life where, for their own soul lessons, might not be what we would consider exciting or glamorous or whatever. They could be in poverty, they'd be ill or have, you know, a physical problem, but that's for their soul advancement. So initially we might not think of them as, you know, departing and having this really bright light, but they could be someone that's going to show up as one of the photos I have on my orb page. Someone actually sent to me, she photographed this gorgeous, deep blue horn in Louisiana. And I wrote back to her, and I said, well, I feel that's a very advanced soul. And then when I was at Casa Vega spiritualist camp in Florida in January, in this one hotel, I was taking pictures downstairs in the restaurant area. It was empty. And I got a beautiful violet orb on a table. So to me, those spirit orbs are souls that are, say, more advanced, older than one that might be a more, say, yellow, you know, or orange. And I have gotten those as well.
That's interesting.
But
I hadn't heard of different colored orbs.
I'm sorry, dear.
I hadn't heard of different colored orbs, actually. I'd only heard of white and sort of the more yellow and golden colored orbs. I didn't realize that they can appear in color of indigo and blue, etc.
Yeah, well, like I said, on my orb page, I do have, you know, the examples of the different colors. And what struck me from when my mom passed, not only was it so much larger than anything else I've gotten in the house before, but it was a beautiful shades of blue with like an orange halo around it. And it seems to always be accompanied by a smaller one, which is an even brighter blue, and again has different colors to it, which I believe is my cousin Virginia, who passed 17 years ago. So, yeah, they're not just white, you know, because a lot of people will say, well, that's just dust, you know, and I have come across people in my own family who say, oh, that's just dust. I'm like, no, it's not. You know, after a while, you can tell if it's moisture, humidity, or dust. And when you get something that I call the streak, or it goes like whoosh, that's not dust. Dust doesn't move like that. And again, I have some examples on my webpage.
I'll have to take a look at your webpage, Celeste, and see some of those photographs. You mentioned dust and people that are skeptical and might say, well, this is dust, not an orb. What would you say to skeptics about spirit orbs?
Well, there are people that... There's an old saying, I believe it goes, there are none so blind as those who will not see. Now, in this day and age, so much has been revealed to us. And to just discount everything, that goes, you know, back 500 years to, you know, the earth was flat and, you know, don't you dare say otherwise. I just don't understand. Maybe it's a fear of thinking that there is something beyond that we can't control, because once someone has gone off into spirit energy, you can't control them or do anything to them or communicate with them like you could before. Maybe that's part of it. There are just some people. Now, I did a gallery at the local VFW a few months ago, and I knew ahead of time there were going to be two women, two friends that were going to come, and one had short blonde hair, and sure enough, there were the two of them, you know, that were friends, and the woman at the end was sitting there tighter in a crab's ass. She had her hands and her arms folded, her legs were crossed, and I said, you're not really into this, are you? She goes, nope, I don't believe any of it. When you're dead, you're dead. I'm like, well, you know, it's not my job to convince you otherwise, but I do ask that you be objective. And if something belongs to you that I say, please be honest enough to own it. Wouldn't you know, half of what came through was for her. And I took pictures, and orbs that I got that day were mostly around her. But she didn't want to believe it for whatever reason. You know, and it's not my job to convince people. They need to learn for themselves.
I remember once doing a demonstration of mediumship, and there was a gentleman there with his wife, and she'd obviously encouraged him to come along. She was interested, and he was completely skeptical, but he ended up in tears because his father and his mother came through really accurately. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to prove a skeptic that there is much more to life than one might think. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your family, if you don't mind, Celeste.
Sure. No problem.
Because I obviously know of the Fox sisters. I think everybody that has studied spiritualism or that's interested in spiritualism knows the story of the Fox sisters. But you mentioned talking with members of your family and somebody being skeptical. And that intrigued me because of the history, the background of you in your family of the Fox sisters. Do most members of your family thoroughly understand what occurred with the Fox sisters, or are some of them just disinterested?
Well, my cousins, are well aware of the family history, but, one cousin just totally dismisses it. Another one actually came to me when I first started all this to a practice circle in New York years ago. We were sitting in the back corner, and the teacher, Lee Van Zyl of Montclair Metaphysical School, she's great, and I learned a lot from her. She had an exercise going where we were to, sit next to her in the front and facing everybody else, just start giving a reading. Well, for about 20 minutes, someone else had gone up there, and I keep hearing in my head, biscuits. Biscuits? Whatever the heck that means. So then she looked at me and said, all right, you come up here, and sit down, because I always seem to every week, hit on getting somebody. So I sat down and I said, I just have to say before I start that I just kept hearing the word biscuits in my head for 20 minutes. And she goes, oh, I can take that. Yesterday at the center, it was so busy, all I did was eat biscuits all day. She's from South Africa, like the British, you call cookies biscuits. So then I got in her uncle and started describing him in relation to, where she lived on a game ranch in South Africa. And he raced cars and what he looked like. And I got in her uncle, and it was an uncle the whole time saying biscuits in my head. Well, my cousin was sitting back there looking like, oh, my God. I guess she was expecting my head to start twirling around. I don't know. But she didn't really know what to make of it on our way back to the train station. Yeah, she was like, there's something going on here. I don't know if I can own it or accept all of it, but I sure as heck saw it. So, it's not my job to convince anybody. They need to learn for themselves. I do have other relatives that are totally in agreement with, my mediumship, my interest in the paranormal and metaphysical and spiritual world. And for the most part, I would say that's most of the family.
Well, talking of family, Celeste, can you explain to our listeners who the Fox sisters were or are?
Well, they were my great-great-aunts on my father's mother's side. Dad's mom, her maiden name was Fox, Elizabeth Fox. Her father was Benjamin Franklin Calvin Fox, and his father was David Fox, who was the only brother of the sisters. Now, on Dad's side of the family, they tend to live well into their 90s, and so generations are really spread out where you still had people being born, 20 years later after the first one was. So, going back to 1820 when David was born, considering he had a great-great-grandfather, you might think that there would be more greats in there, but no, it was my great-great-grandfather on Dad's side. But it's funny, the family was Methodist. Their father, John Fox, was a staunch Methodist once he kind of cleaned up his act and went back to the family after being away for 10 years on and off. And that's when he and Margaret had Kate and Maggie. And my grandmother was Methodist, and my great-aunt Florence, her youngest sister, was Methodist. And when I went to visit Florence in Seattle one time, she was 93 then. And I started getting a renewed interest in the Fox sisters. I mean, this was over 20 years ago. And I said, hey, Florence, what can you tell me about the Fox sisters? And I got the hand in my face and, no, we don't talk about them. Nope, that's it. Nope, don't bring it up. And that was it. She shut me down. So as soon as I got back east, I had to go looking up more. You know, my aunt that passed last year, when I asked her a couple of years ago if she remembers what she heard growing up, she didn't want to talk about them. They were the family scandal, you know, because of what happened at the end with Maggie disavowing everything. And then a year later, recanting that. But it looked like they were cuckoo, you know, honestly. But there's a book by an in-law, Miriam Buckner Pond, called The Unfortunate Fox Family. You know, Time is Kind, the story of the unfortunate Fox family. And she had actually interviewed relatives early in the 1900s and seen letters. And she wrote a very comprehensive book of the family history. And that is what I really go to for more accurate information. People will find something on Wikipedia, which is, you know, half the time just anyone can put anything on Wikipedia, you know. And everybody knows what I call the Cliff Notes version. But there's a lot more to it. And as you said in the intro, they really were a large part of American history for over 40 years. They knew everybody who was famous in the United States and in Europe. And they really, in many ways, are very well respected for starting something that actually had been around for thousands of years. But because of increased communication with telegraphs and newspapers and, you know, the Erie Canal having been built, the word just spread so quickly when everything started with them and just continued from there.
Well, can you tell us or explain to us, Celeste, why the Fox sisters were famous? What actually happened that caused them to become so talked about?
Well, there was a cottage that they were renting. The father was renting while he was having a new house built 2 miles away up at by David's farm. Now, David's farm had also been in the family. He had bought some property from a relative, and then John Fox was going to have a new home there. Well, he was also a blacksmith, and there was a smithy outside of this cottage on the corner of Hydesville Road in this little hamlet, which still is a little hamlet of Hydesville, New York, near Newark, New York. And other people who had lived there left after hearing strange noises. And things were rather quiet. They moved in December of 1847, but by March of 1848, the knocks and rappings became so loud and so disruptive. I mean, they were practically ill from the lack of sleep. And at one point then, Kate says, well, do like I do. And she knocks three times, and then she hears in response, and it's like, oh my God, it can hear us. Well, then she made like she was going to snap her fingers, you know, however many times, and then it still responded to how many times she meant, you know, was going to do that. And she says, oh, Mother, look, it can see us as well as hear us. Well, then their mother, who actually all the psychic ability comes from Margaret Smith Fox's side of the family, and she devised a way of communicating later using the alphabet, but she would say, all right, you know, is this a spirit, an injured spirit? And it would be like one for yes, two for no, you know. And she asked how many children she had. Well, she had given birth to seven. The very first one died in infancy, but she had six living. Well, it rapped out seven raps, which was correct. Then they got in neighbors from across the street who would ask questions. Well, how many children do I have? What are their ages? And it would get accurate answers. Well, it seems that before they rented. There was a family that, or a couple, that had a peddler stop by. And back in those days, the wandering peddler would sell things like sewing notions to women, you know, fabrics and lace and thimbles and such. And they seemed to know this guy and told their live-in maid, oh, we don't need you anymore. You can go home to your mother. And then
Celeste,
a few days later, they told her to come back. And,
Celeste,
oh, can you make a new coat? Because we have this fabric here. Well, she never saw the peddler, whose name they ascertained to be Charles Rosna.
Celeste, can we pause just one moment there with the peddler? Because we need to take a short commercial break. And I was thinking this would be a great moment to pause and take that break. And then talk about the peddler when we come back, because obviously he's a very important part of the story.
Yeah, it started with him.
Okay, well, we'll take our break and we'll be back in just a moment.
All right.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Well, welcome back, Celeste. This is very, very interesting. Now, let me ask you, can you repeat the name of the peddler for us and then tell us more about him?
Well, they ascertained that his name was Charles B. Rosna, R-O-S-N-A. Sometimes you see it written as Rosma, M-A. But no one seemed to be able to find record of anyone other under either name in that area. But they do agree that after a certain date, he just disappeared off the face of the earth. Well, like I said, the girls were hearing these raps in response to questions. And it was then determined that he had been murdered in the East Room upstairs, and his $500 that he had with him was stolen. You know, the Bells knew that he would have money on him, of course, you know, traveling around as he did. And he was murdered for the $500 and buried in the basement. So everyone starts digging in the basement. David and other friends and relatives, you know, came by. And it seems that the house is near what you call a creek or a little stream. And there had been a lot of rains at that time, and the water table was high. Well, it seems that they did find a piece of skull with some red hair and another piece of a tooth, which actually David Fox kept until shortly before his death in 1902. And then he destroyed it. Why, I don't know. But they had to stop because of rising water. Well, many years later, even after everything that went on with Maggie and Kate and their alcoholism, but the father had been alcoholic, that's why he was gone for 10 years. And unfortunately, when the seances started, people would afterwards give them champagne or brandy. Well, they didn't know years ago about the genetic connection. And the poor girls, by the time they were in their early 20s, they were alcoholics. You know, I'll say it, they were. And a lot happened years later because of that, which didn't help things. It didn't diminish their mediumship by any means. But years later, down at the old house, there was a false wall in the basement and a skeleton and a peddler's box was found there. And it kind of, you know, brought to light that, you know, they weren't making it all up. It wasn't all a fraud. They weren't just cracking toe joints, you know, in response to questions. I mean, you can crack your knuckles in your hand. The synovial fluid will make that pop, but it takes time for the pressure to build up again in order to crack your knuckle, you know. So this whole business about cracking toe joints and all to get these answers, again, I think was maybe a way of not taking full responsibility for opening up the side of spirit energy that people were afraid of years ago. You know, it was a handy excuse in many ways. So, again, I can see why they were the family scandal and very controversial among even my own relatives to this day. But I think that what they went through and death threats and attempts on their lives, it broke up the family because the mother acted as the chaperone and went with the girls everywhere, and the father stayed and did his blacksmithing business and stayed with David for the most part back at the farm until he was much older, and then he was with them, in fact, when he passed away. But in the end, it really broke up a family that had reunited. And what happened was, because their father, David, he was like a Sunday school teacher in his Methodist church. And in New York, one morning he was going to go to church with his son-in-law. And Leah, the oldest, had gotten the message to, you know, do the alphabet. And she wrote out a message saying about, you know, "We're proud of you, son. We'll see you soon." And he took it to mean, you know, his parents, who had passed, of course, were going to be seeing him, that his time was close. And he came back from church and said that, you know, that meant more to me about living and being a spiritual being than what I got in church. You know, it proves to me more that life does live on. You know, the whole, what I tell people is, I say, well, you know, you believe in Easter, what Easter's all about? And they go, well, of course. I say, well, it's the same thing, spirit living on. And then you see the wheels turning in their head. It just gets me every time, you know, because then they don't have a rebuttal for that, because we are all spirit energy.
Yeah, I don't understand why people think that this is it, that you're born from nowhere, that you live a life, a conscious life, and then it's all just over. I just couldn't, I don't think I could cope with life if I had that belief or paradigm, Celeste, don't you think?
I know, and I've been the same way. And even as a real little girl, I was always feeling that there was something beyond, that I had been around this block before. And I know it, you know, I do know it. And like I said, with that one woman when I did the gallery at the VFW, just sat there all twisted up like a pretzel and is saying, well, I don't believe in anything, and when you're dead, you're dead. But I, you know, I didn't want to get into an argument with her in any way. I didn't want to say, well, you know, give her the whole do you believe in Easter thing, because I thought, yeah, you know what, whatever. Just don't put a damper on energy coming in for anyone else, all right? But if it belongs to you, just be honest enough to say so. And like I said, half of it was for her. And then I saw her friend a couple of weeks later, and I said, well, how's she doing? Did she leave, believe in anything? She goes, that's the way she is. But I was impressed, and I reminded her about what you said about grandfather's farm and all. I said, well, you know, that's her reality. Everyone has the reality that they're comfortable with. And sometimes we move on with it and we expand our realities, and some people are afraid of the change. And that's their soul lesson while they're here.
Well, going back to the Fox sisters, Celeste, my understanding is that they traveled around a lot demonstrating their mediumship. So they conducted a lot of seances.
Yes.
And do you... You don't hear so much nowadays about seances and particularly physical mediumship. Do you have a view on why that is?
Well, I know at Lee's school in Montclair, they do physical mediumship. I know that one of the mediums I actually met a couple of years ago, Audrey Willey from Australia, she teaches physical mediumship. It is out there, you know, for whatever reason you don't hear so much of it. Maybe because years ago, so a lot of it was really fraudulent, you know. I think under the right circumstances, something can be proven to be real with physical mediumship now. But again, it's like, sometimes when you say something to someone that, you know, you're a psychic medium, they look at you like you have three heads. Because there are frauds out there, especially those who say, oh, I can remove a curse from you for another $100.
Oh, yes. I had a case the other day, Celeste. A lady contacted me and said, oh, can you give me your advice on whether this is reasonable? A psychic in Florida told me that I need to pay $30,000 to have a curse removed.
And I would report them to the police.
This is what gives spiritual people that are working in the metaphysical field a terrible name.
I know, it does. And you have to, you know, really just be honest and real and do your thing and let someone decide on their own. I mean, the last large psychic fair that I did, I had 17 readings that day. It was the most I'd ever done in one day. I was exhausted. But I hit on every single one of them. And I just do what I had been taught. You know, you get, what do they look like? The relationship to the person? How did they pass away? What special thing can you share with the person, the sitter? So that they know, oh, yeah, well, this is my uncle because he used to, you know, eat donuts every Saturday morning or something. You know, something that you wouldn't know. And that proves to them that, you know, spirit energy is around. And I would tell them that, all right, I'm going to tell you something that you did in the last week or two. And I give a couple of examples as I get it in my head. And I never saw this person before. You know, how would I know that? And I love it when I hear people say, how do you know that? It's like, it just came to me. They're telling me this. I see a picture in my mind's eye. I hear it. I just sense it. I just know it, you know. But what you need to know is not so much how do I get it, but that it's there and they're with you, you know, and that they care about you and they're you know, always around and they've never really left you and they want you to know that. But it's the others that, like you said, you know, trying to remove curses or demanding extra money. They're just out-and-out frauds.
So tell me,
something
Celeste.
Unusual, if I could interject quickly. A couple of weeks ago now, I was coming back from Connecticut on the Amtrak. And in New York, the woman I was sitting next to left, and this young girl wanted to sit by me. I'm okay. Well, she was getting off at D.C., and I was getting off at Trenton. So I said, well, you sit by the window so I don't have to crawl over you later to get out. Well, after about 10 minutes, because I see she was texting on her phone, after about 10 minutes, I started getting the tingles and the goosebumps on top of my head and the side of my face, and I'm thinking, look, whoever you are, you need to go to your family. I'm on the train now. I'm not really open for this. And she goes to put the phone to her ear, and I pointed out to her that we were in the quiet car. She put the phone down and buries her head in her hands and starts sobbing. I'm like, honey, what's the matter? What happened? She goes, I just learned my brother just died. I'm like, that's who was contacting me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I gave her my card. I said, look, feel free to get in touch, send me pictures, whatever. But I was telling her about orbs and taking pictures and knowing that her brother's energy has just changed. And, you know, unfortunately it happened. But I said, look, of all the people that sit next to on a train, you sit next to the medium the moment you realize your brother's just died. So strange things happen, and how can you say any of that was fraudulent?
It's very interesting. What's your strangest experience with spirit, Celeste?
Well, that was one of them. That's got to be near the top of the list. Are you asking, say, in regards to giving a reading or just my own actual experience?
Yes, in your own experience.
Well, one thing that was rather unusual was my late boyfriend. We had gone to Ireland together about 15 years ago. He went with a work crew a week earlier to repair an old monastery, northwestern Ireland, and I followed a week later. And the drinking song of the group was American Pie. So every pub we went to, everybody was always singing American Pie, and all the Irish knew all the words. So he passed away of septicemia 4 years ago now. And I took his childhood friend's mother in my car back to his mother's house. And then she was going to get, you know, into her husband's car because my car was easier for her, you know, with her physical limitations. Well, anyway, I had turned my radio down. I never turned it off, but I had turned it down so we could speak. And then after she left, I turned it up and go to hit this one particular button. And it was like you had disconnected the battery or the alternator. You know, it got all weird. And I thought, oh, man, I have to reset all these batteries, all these buttons. And I finally decided on which one I wanted to hear. And wouldn't you know, I hear, bye, bye, Miss American Pie. And I'm like, they said you were a jokester. And it's like that was him saying hi. You know, he screwed up all my radio buttons, and then when I get it fixed, that song came on at that moment. And there were times when I would go to visit his gravesite and leave the cemetery, and as I approach the gate, I push a button, and American Pie would come on.
That's a great story. Really wonderful story.
A little unusual.
Well, Celeste, now, for our listeners that want to visit your website, can you just remind us of your website address and tell us what people can find there?
Well, as you said in the intro, I have it as Celeste Oliver - the Psychic Fox. But if you go into Google and just put Celeste Oliver, it'll come up. You put the Psychic Fox, it'll come up. And I have an intro of how I'm related to the sisters, and also pages on further reading, such as like Dr. Newton's books. There was a book written by Barbara Weisberg who met with me while she was doing it, researching it, and she wrote They Talk to the Dead, and she was very objective about it. I really liked how it ended up. I felt that she was leaving it to the reader to decide for themselves what to think about the sisters. She wasn't steering anyone into any, you know, mindset. But I also have a page about readings that I had done. You know, people allowed me to put their readings up on the web. I either changed the names or left them out. Upcoming events, things are a little slow right now, and I've done it that way on purpose because I am working on my mother's house. My brother and I are going to be selling, so I've been busy with that. And the page on the orb photos, interviews, and I'll add you to the list later, and past events I've attended, and testimonials, if you want a reading, page there, and also about Fox photos, you know, some family photos and related sites and how to get a free reading.
Excellent. Well, we'll be sure to check that out, Celeste. And it's been a real pleasure and honor to have you back on the show with us again.
Well, it's been great. I've been looking forward to it. I did want to say that. Besides working with the mediumship, I also am going to be giving public talks about my journey with breast cancer. And if anyone is interested in having me speak at any of their organizations to get in touch with me through the Psychic Box right now. I am working on the webpage for the breast cancer, but that's something where, too, I wonder what was my sole purpose and what was the reason why I got it, and now I've figured it out.
Well, that sounds wonderful, Celeste. We're grateful for you joining us, and we'll certainly check out that webpage. Will that page be connected to your psychic website when it's complete?
I can link it, you know, again, because of wondering, you know, why did I get it and the sole purpose behind it. So I will have a link there, too, later on.
Excellent. Well, thank you again, Celeste, and we wish you all the best for 2014 and all of your projects.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. It's been a pleasure. I enjoyed our first interview, and this has just been great. I thank you so much for having me again.
Our pleasure, Celeste. Thank you so much.
All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
You too. Goodbye. Well, that was a great interview, and I want to remind everybody that you can listen to the archive of our interview with Celeste Oliver. All of the archives for our shows are available at Psychic Access Talk Radio. I would like to take a few moments to make some announcements. Please stay tuned for the second half of our show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. I will announce the call-in number a little later, so have your pen and paper ready. And if you were unable to catch our show last week on spirit photography, you'll find a recorded archive link. And as I said, all of our shows are archived at psychicaccesstalkradio.com. And please do feel free to circulate those archive links and future show details to your friends and family. We want to connect with as many people as possible, so go ahead and share those links. And do visit our website, psychicbloggers.com, as well. This is a great site. There's a lot of information there. You can learn all about everything from the paranormal to reincarnation, the how-tos of psychic development. And all of that information is there free of charge for you, contributed by the psychics at psychicaccess.com. And if you are interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com. You'll find that all of our readers are verified and accuracy tested, each with their unique gifts. And each psychic has a detailed profile so that you can learn more about them and choose from some of the most authentic gifted psychics around. It's an honor to work with Psychic Access and Doug. We have very high expectations of ourselves and everybody that works at psychicaccess.com. And if you want a reading from one of the co-hosts on our radio show here, psychicaccesstalkradio.com, you'll find that we're available at Psychic Access. So if you'd like a personal reading, just come along and find us. We'd love to hear from you. Now, if you have your own website, you can earn 50 cents a minute on every reading on traffic that is referred to psychicaccess.com. If you'd like more information about that, go to psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And if you like our show, invite your friends to join us in the chat room and listen to the psychic viewpoint. There's something for everybody, so please spread the word. We very much appreciate it. Now, we've come to that part of the show. We'll be having our interaction. We will be discussing the interview and other things. I will give you the number for a little bit later on in the show, but please don't call in just yet. We won't be able to take your call right now, but we'll let you know when we can. But when we give you the word, the number is 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. Well, Marie Donna, what did you think of the interview?
Oh, fabulous. Wonderful information and great personal experiences that she shared. She's very articulate. And I love addressing the fact of looking at proof for skeptics, because it is healthy to be skeptical, and it is nice to be able to talk about proof of the afterlife and proof of energy surviving after we cross over. And she handled all of that so well. Great topic.
I agree with you that we should be skeptical. I believe that we should test things.
Yes.
So I don't believe in just accepting everything that I'm told or everything that I read, but absorbing it and then testing for myself.
Me too. I agree with all of that. I love that, and I always love to work with skeptics because it brings a fresh viewpoint in. And I also like research as well because I love seeing things tested in a clinical situation and finding out that they hold up scientifically as well. We need that in this day and age. We actually, I think, need both aspects of the intuitive as well as the scientific. So I love when we have guests that discuss both sides of that, not just the intuitive side.
What kind of research are you most interested in?
Most recently, I'm fascinated with remote healing, which is related to quantum physics. And there were a number of clinical tests done, even with radiation machines, where they had cancer patients talking to the machines. And for the groups that did that, they got better results with less dosage of radiation and had quicker results. And this was done over a number of times to call it validated research. And I love that because machines aren't sentient beings, but they are giving off energy. So it seems that even when we're talking energetically to machine energy, we can have some impact on that. So that I love that kind of material because for people who are devout atheists and skeptics, that's a great entryway into talking about energy from another perspective, that where we can bypass some of the religious aspects that people get scared of, or the spiritual aspects that people get scared of. So I'm loving quantum physics in general right now and the theories behind remote healing and some of the tests that have been done on that. So that's my current passion.
Oh, yes. Well, I think that the advances in our understanding of science are really beneficial to the metaphysical field or realm. Have you read the book or heard of the book Hands of Light?
I've seen it, but I have not read it, no.
That is a really, really wonderful book that I think is very well researched and extremely informative. It's one of those books that I keep in my bedroom, and I have a bookcase in my bedroom, and the books I keep there are all the books that I like to reread, you know, go back to,
right,
and reference.
Nice. Very nice. One of the books that I really love is called The Field, and I can't. Lynn McTaggart wrote it.
Oh, I love Lynn McTaggart.
Yeah, and I love her because she put very complicated scientific concepts into layman terms that we can really understand. And she's so excited about that field of quantum physics and what that means in terms of human consciousness and working with energy that it really opened the door for many, many people who get scared off by the topic or the language of quantum physics. So I welcome people like that. I'll have to look into The Hands of Light. That's wonderful.
Yes, it's a great book. And I like Lynn McTaggart's work because she's a journalist and a great investigative journalist. So she brings together so much information from so many different sources. It's very, very interesting. I think that it's exciting. What's your feel, though, Nonna Marie, on the time frame for us really proving to everybody that there is life after death? Do you feel that we'll see that in our lifetimes?
That's a really good question, and it's a funny question for me to be looking at because I've doing this kind of work with remote healing and mediumship in a biblical town in a very conservative area of Southern California, where someone who is practicing as a reader actually just got denied a license based on biblical outrage, that it's blasphemy. And it's like the Middle Ages still. And it's amazing because it's only 80 miles east of Los Angeles, and yet there was a huge reaction to this gentleman who's 65 years old, third generation of psychics, and he was denied a license to do readings in his home because of the biblical perspective that this is blasphemy. So the concept of life after death and that we don't go to heaven and that Jesus has saved us all, there's still a huge portion of our country, a large portion of our country that is really enmeshed in the Judeo-Christian tradition only and the conservative interpretation of that as well. So I think it will be quite a while before we see this in mainstream. I really do, based on where I'm living and the fact that I understand there's a large part of the United States that is still like the area that I'm living in. And I'm sad to say that.
Well, let's see what happens. I would love there to be some kind of confirmation, scientific confirmation in our lifetimes, but perhaps there won't be. Perhaps we'll be pushing for that when we're on the other side in spirit.
It's hard. I think it was John Gray was on the Dr. Oz show, and he's a really famous medium, and Dr. Oz had him on, and Dr. Oz said very clearly that he was a skeptic. And by the end of his show, he said he had changed his mind and he was incredibly impressed with what was being shown to him. So we have some very mainstream evidence like that, and it still seems to not be grabbing on to a lot of society. So I don't even know, even with science, I don't know. We look at the fact that we've had arguments in schools about evolution versus the story of the Bible of how man came to earth. That still was going on not so long ago of arguing which theory should be taught in schools.
Yes, and the theory of evolution is still not taught in schools in Tennessee, from what I understand. I live in East Tennessee, and There are some very metaphysical people here. I have some wonderful friends and colleagues that are working in the healing field, alternative healing therapies or modalities, and people that are very clear about the potential or ability for us to interact with spirit, to gather insight, to prove life after death, etc. But I thought that it was a joke when I first moved here and somebody told me that the theory of evolution is not taught in schools here. I honestly thought it was a joke.
I understand. Yeah, it's shocking to find that that is still a hotly debated subject about whether or not we should teach evolution or teach only the story of the Bible. It's incredible to me.
It is fascinating. Yeah. Really fascinating. I look forward to a time when, well, my dream, Nonna Marie, is to create a school with a very for kids, but with a very academic education, very high academic standards and sporting standards, etc. But to include a very comprehensive metaphysical education.
Actually, there was a fantastic school started by the acupuncturist who was made famous by Shirley MacLaine when she wrote her first metaphysical book. She wrote about an acupuncturist in New Mexico who used acupuncture for past life regressions. Well, this woman had children, and she started a school out there that got recognized by the state as a valid school. So it was, a legal, regular school. And the first thing they did when the children came, and they came from all over the world to go to the school, is they did astrology charts on them to find out why they were here on Earth. And they did past life regressions to find out what issues that they were working on and carrying forward. And from the astrology chart and from the past life regression, then they created an academic program that was relevant to the soul having a human experience. It was phenomenal. I went to visit the school. I was so impressed with it. And it was up for about a decade, mainly so this woman had a place to educate her children. And then after that, she shut the school down. So it can be done. And it's very hard to get recognition by the state as a valid school. And she did it in record-breaking time. It was 2 years, I believe. So it can be done, and it was phenomenal. Really, really impressive.
Mm. Well, I would love to do that in life. I feel that could be really great. And just to educate kids about the truth of metaphysics, you know, so much of it is undeniable. I still can't believe some of the conversations I have with skeptics. Mm-hmm. And I believe that skepticism is helpful, but I also believe that we have to be sensible about it. And I was talking with a guy the other day, and I, you know, he said, "Oh, astrology's nonsense." And I said, "So you don't believe that you have any involvement with the planets in our solar system? You don't believe that they affect your life in any way at all?" And he said, "No." So, and I said, "Well, what about the sun?" "No." So I said, "Well, the sun provides energy. It's our vital source of energy, and there's no vegetation, no life without it. You don't think that you're involved or you're affected by that?" "No."
Wow.
And I said, "So if the sun didn't rise tomorrow, it wouldn't affect you?" "No." it was like, it's like the there was a guy at some point that said, "Oh, he doesn't believe in dinosaurs. He believes that God put them there to test our faith."
Yes, I've seen that. When I was teaching university, I had students come in and do a presentation that the Holocaust never existed and was all just a big media hype by liberal media.
Oh, gosh.
And he did an hour speech on it with research and, you know, presentation backing up that it was true. It was amazing that that could be put together like that. And that was a few years ago. That wasn't like 100 years ago.
Wow.
Amazing.
Well, I want to ask you about your work, actually, Nonna Marie, because you are a psychologist and a psychic. How accepted is, well, firstly, I would say to you, we had a very interesting interview with a psychiatrist by the name of Mitchell Gibson. Mm-hmm. And we've done, I think we've done two shows with him, and they're very, very interesting shows to listen to. I've listened to the archives for those a couple of times. And I asked him whether psychiatrists, or he finds that psychiatrists, his colleagues, are open-minded about psychic ability and metaphysics. And he said absolutely, because they have some very, very strange experiences. And he spoke of one client of his who made noises like a computer might make. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman said that he was a computer from the future, and that he could predict the future. And so Dr. Gibson documented many of the things he said, and they did actually happen. And so he said, you hear and experience such strange things as a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. that generally I would say most psychiatrists are open-minded. But what about psychologists? So you have a background in psychology. What's your view on psychologists? Do you think that they generally are open-minded?
You know, honestly, even with psychiatrists like Judith Orloff, who wrote Second Sight, who is a colleague that we have the same metaphysical teacher that we have studied with since 1985, who is an entity, a spirit that comes into a man's body. And so she basically came out of the closet and went from prescribing drugs to becoming a full-blown psychic metaphysician psychiatrist. So in places like Los Angeles and Chicago and New York, I think these things are very accepted, even in psychology. But once you hit the smaller areas like where I am, when I was getting a degree, I purposefully did not go for licensure, so I could not legally get in trouble for touching clients. This was before Reiki was more accepted than it is now. And so I could not be held to any kind of punishment by licensure for doing things like past life regressions or energy work or alternative medicine instead of prescription medicine. So I honestly am not that optimistic about it yet in areas outside of large metropolitan kind of liberal areas. Out here, it where I live, it is still pharmaceutically based. Both psychology and psychiatry both look at very mainstream, can we get you on a drug program and can we get you kind of up and running, not looking at larger issues. So
looking at the actual source of the problem.
Exactly. That is mm-hmm. not really available. And insurance will no longer pay for things like that. They will pay for EMDR therapy, which is very, very powerful therapy. It's a kind of a watered down version of emotional freedom therapy, which is a self-help therapy that really shifts your neurological patterning, the way the neurons fire in the brain. And EMDR is a pretty far out therapy, and it's so effective that it's accepted now in mainstream psychology, and most insurance will pay for it immediately because it is so effective. That's about the most far out thing I've seen across the board in psychology still. So I find it still considered outrageous to be a metaphysical person in the mental health field, except among those people who kind of secretly talk about it. So, for example, in the town that I'm in, for 8 years, I never talked about my spiritual work at all until I was really ready to leave education, because mm-hmm. once I talk about it, I'd be burning a bridge behind me that I would not be able to build again.
Well, Nona, you actually have a caller from Louisiana.
Uh-oh. No, I'm kidding.
So if you could go ahead and read from our caller from Louisiana, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Hi, who am I talking to?
Hi, my name's Kelly.
Hi, how can I help you?
I was just wondering, like, I've been on several job interviews, I'm seeking employment, and I was wondering, like, do you see any jobs coming my way?
It feels to me that there is a slight delay in you getting a solid job. It feels like you're going to be doing some temporary work, maybe either through an agency or through some contract work for a while. And it feels like there's a reason for that, by the way, which is it's almost like you have you've lost a little bit of self-confidence in yourself, and you kind of have been in situations where you have not really been treated well and acknowledged for the work that you do. And there's some healing that needs to go on with that. Otherwise, you will end up in another job situation that will not treat you the best. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, and I'm saying this to you so that you don't look at the temporary jobs things as bad, but instead look at them as a kind of opportunity of schooling for yourself, where you can start to present yourself with a little more self-esteem, where you demand a little more self-respect, and you can practice in these temporary jobs without feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm scared. I don't want to lose this great permanent job I have. So it's even though it's a delay, it's a good delay. It's kind of like saying we need to get you into a higher self-esteem bracket before you get a full-time job. The full-time permanent job feels to me like it will be coming in the second week of January. So until then, I would look to working through agencies and taking kind of temporary placements and not just going to it like depressed, like, oh my gosh, I'm just have to do this. But instead that you go there practicing really new behaviors. Dr. Phil said something that was so wonderful one time. He said, we teach people how to treat us. And I thought that was so brilliant. Sometimes we teach people how to treat us with no respect because we work really hard and we don't ask for much. And then we start getting to be taken advantage of. So sometimes we have to learn to go into a job where we work really hard, but we also put out an energy that demands respect for the work that we do. And you are a little bit lacking in that area. You've lost a little bit of confidence in that area. And you need to get, pull off the Band-Aid there and let that heal a little bit.
Okay.
Aside from taking these temporary jobs, also, if you're interested, I would Google emotional freedom therapy. I would look up Mercola, actually, Dr. Mercola, emotional freedom therapy, and do that work on yourself about some of the issues of feeling that you're not the best or you're not good enough or, some of the self-doubt issues that you have, which we all have, by the way. It's not like you're a bad case of this. We all have this stuff that we have to work on, and periodically we sometimes lose faith in ourselves. So I would say you're well within the normal range. It's not like you're, an emergency case here, but it's like you need a tune-up in that area. And if you do this work, the emotional freedom therapy, it will also affect your relationships in your social life as well for the better. Because sometimes your friends take advantage of you. You're like, they always count on you. Always.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they're not really appreciative of you. And sometimes when you need something, they're not really there for you.
Yeah.
So we'd like to see that get fixed up a little bit. And the way to fix that is to shift your energy about it. And then that will ripple out in the physical sciences. If we change one electron of one atom, the entire substance changes just because that electron shifted. So you're an electron. If you shift yourself just a little bit, it will have a huge impact on how people treat you, and they'll stop taking you so much for granted. And also you'll stop taking yourself for granted, because sometimes you kind of, you just give and give and give. And sometimes you forget to realize how much you're giving to other people.
Yeah.
So this is a good, I know it's a delay and I know it's not the best answer that you want to hear, but to me, it's a good thing because you're going to be taken care of and you're being given a chance to grow so that you don't get stuck in a job situation that is not healthy and doesn't feel good to you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, sweetie.
Have a good night.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I have a call now from New York. Who's calling from New York?
Hello?
New York. Hello. What's your name?
Anne.
Hello, Anne. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I just had a conversation with my mother about the fact that one of my friends stopped needing me, just kind of is not paying any attention to me. And we've been friends since high school, so it's been since, 1986 or 87. And my mother said that, her name is Jeannie, and my mother said that the reason might be that I complain so much that she's just tired of me. And I want to know if I... you know, if I do complain and I have turned her off by this.
Okay, well, let me say to you, first of all, I don't feel that this situation is going to last. So I feel that you will have contact with your friend and things will get back to normal. So please don't think that this is it. You've upset this friend, or she's upset with you, and that you've irrevocably damaged the relationship. That doesn't feel to be the case at all. But interestingly, before I go on, actually, I see that it will just resolve itself nicely. That you'll have a really positive interaction with your friend, in which you discuss these things. But interestingly, when I look at the cards for some insight, I get the Knight of Swords in the present position. And the Knight is generally understood to be a message or a communication rather than a person. And swords are, well, firstly, swords are, they correlate with air, and air is thoughts and the things we might communicate. So thought patterns and what we might communicate. But the swords also represent conflict. So, for example, if I were...
I'm sorry. My phone charge is ending. Do you mind summing it up? Because I'm going to get cut off from you.
Oh, you're going to get cut off. Sure. Well, the Knight of Swords says to me that there is some negative focus. Okay. So it doesn't mean that you're always negative, but I feel that you do have some focus upon the things that aren't working out, and you do tend to talk about those things. So it'll do you good to focus more on the positive and less on challenges. But I do feel that that's been an issue between you and your friend. Do I feel it's going to be a long-standing problem? No. Do I feel that the two of you will have a really positive, warm discussion and get back to normal? Yes. So that's what I see for you.
So in other words, you see that my negative outlook does affect my relationships with other people, is what you're saying, or at least with her.
At times, yes. Yes. But more importantly, it's something that would affect you. The more we create what we focus upon. The things we focus upon, our thoughts, our words, the emotions that we nurture or harbor, they mold our unconscious selves. And my belief is that everything is manifested from the unconscious. So I want to feed my unconscious self really positive things. So even when there's a challenge in my life, there's an opportunity to learn from it, to grow, and to project positive energy to create what I want to create and get where I want to be. And doing that is extremely powerful when it comes to our ability to manifest. So most important thing I feel is that you should consider what you resonate, what you focus upon, and how you might create a shift there so that you're happier, your outlook is optimistic and uplifting for yourself, and you'll find that other people will feel more uplifted by you as well.
Okay, thank you. That's okay. Helpful.
You're welcome, Anne. Good luck to you. Okay, let's see. Okay, Nonna Marie, you have a call from Ohio now.
Ohio.
Hello, Ohio. Do you have a name?
Yes, Sherry.
How are you, and how can I help you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine.
Good. What can I do for you?
No one said you say anything good for me and for my children.
Oops, you're breaking up a little bit. I heard something about your children.
Yeah, you say anything good for my children, for myself?
I'm sorry, it's still breaking up a little bit, so I'm not understanding the question.
I said, I'm asking, do you see anything good for me and for my kids?
Oh, anything good for you and your kids?
Yes.
Yeah, it feels like things are a little bit chaotic right now, sort of like, it's almost like an egg has dropped on the sidewalk and things have splattered a little bit. So it doesn't feel like anything going on is irreparable. It feels like, what is the name of your oldest child?
His name's John.
So to me, John is somebody I am a little bit worried about because he feels very, like he almost has the most sensitive personality. But he covers it like he's sort of tough and he can handle everything. And so one thing I would say with him is that he's not handling things as well as he appears to be. And yet there's not much you can do to help him directly. He's very independent and it's very hard to support him. And I would say to you, though, that if you, the power of prayer, there's been a lot of research done that when we pray, it shifts the energy, and he could actually use some prayers from you. And the prayers would be that the people, the angels, the non-physical beings around him that guide him, that they make themselves known to him and help him in his adjustment time right now. Does that make sense?
Well, see, somebody said he was sick. He's sick, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel that he's sick? You're
Excuse
cutting
me?
Out. You're cutting out.
Yes, I know. We're having not a great connection. So the most that you can do for him with everything that's going on is really to pray, to talk to his guides and to ask for assistance for him. But what he is going through is his journey. And I don't see anything that you can do to waylay it other than asking for some spiritual energies to come in and help him. It's a big thing that he's going through. The other thing I would say is I think you know at times when he's not doing well, even though he acts like he is okay and handling everything. So the more that you talk to him in a supportive manner, even if he acts like he doesn't care, it will mean a lot to him. He's kind of like, not macho, but sometimes people act like they're super strong and they don't show you any weakness, but they really need a lot of love and support. And he really needs that right now of all of your family, other than yourself, because I'm going to talk about you in a minute, but he really needs to hear from you how much you love him, how much you believe in him, how much you are thinking about him and thinking about him getting better, because that will give him a lot of hope and a lot of strength. He probably won't tell you that. He probably won't even really say thank you but having that conversation with him more than once will make a very big difference to him and help him cultivate a little bit more hope than he has right now.
Okay.
Now for yourself, by the way, I would say also that you and he are a little bit alike that way, in that you get very independent. You're very much like, I can do it myself. I don't need anybody and I don't want anybody to help me. And I would say, I understand that position. I understand why you do that, but this is a time right now where you could also use some encouragement and support. You could use it both from spirit, in other words, from angelic sources. And you also, by the way, you have an ancestor who is on the other side who is very available to help you. You have somebody who is very, very connected to you. And it feels like actually coming from your father's side, like it's like a grandfather or a great-grandfather. It's a male figure.
They all passed away.
Huh?
I said, they all passed away.
Yes, I'm talking about a spirit on the other side. I'm talking about someone who is not alive, who is on the other side, and I call that an ancestor. That's different than an angelic force. An ancestor is somebody from our family line who has crossed over and yet is still connected to us and helping us right now through our current time. So when we have that kind of ancestral help, we can very often contact that help through automatic writing. In other words, you talk to this person, you talk to this being and say, I need help. What do I do in this situation? And then just start writing the answer. You can write it on a computer. You can write it by hand. And you'd be very, very surprised what information that you get. When we have ancestral help, it often comes through much clearer than what we call angelic or spiritual help. So we don't all have this. You have this. You have some help in your bloodlines available to you. So because you're kind of resistant or you have a little bit of pride about getting help from real live people, you would do very well to get some help from this ancestral spirit. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Yes,
do you understand?
What about my-
yeah.
Hey, can I say something real quick? What about my other son? He's 25. His name's Jeremy.
Jeremy is, you know, he's okay in many ways. He is a little bit on a rebellious streak, a little bit of a wild streak, and I believe he's going to get himself in quite a bit of trouble in the near future. So be prepared to help him through that, but I would say in kind of a tough love type of approach. And again, this is why I think it's really important for you to get some support, either human support or spiritual support, to help you through these next couple of months until about February. It's going to be a little bit rough for you. But he is sitting on top of a lot of emotions, and the way he handles that sometimes is by acting out and getting in trouble. Makes sense?
Yep, absolutely.
Yep. So be prepared for that. Please do not rescue him. Tell him you love him, but let him climb out of the hole he digs himself into, because unless he starts to face these consequences, he will not learn to start controlling his actions. Right now, he thinks he needs to control his emotion, but what he really needs to do is let himself be emotional and learn to control his behavior so he doesn't do things that get him in a lot of trouble.
Okay, and one more, and I'm going to my daughter. Her name's Maddie. Madison.
We can't take more than one question per reading, I'm afraid, because we have so many people calling. I do apologize for interrupting.
So you can find me on Psychic Access if you want to ask some more questions under the name Nona, okay?
Hello?
So did you hear what Steve said?
I'm not sure she can hear you, Nona. What I was saying is we can only take one question per caller, but if you would like to ask Nona Marie more questions, you can contact her at Psychic Access, and her profile name is Nona. Now, we have another caller from Ohio, and thank you for your reading, by the way, Nona Marie. I will take this call from Ohio. Who's calling from Ohio?
Sandy.
Sorry, Cindy. Your name is?
Cindy.
Cindy, how are you doing?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, Cindy. What's your question?
I wonder if you see anything good for me coming towards me, for me.
And, well, let me say for you, Cindy, the first thing is I feel that there is far more balance coming to you. I feel strongly that the issue with you is that you're juggling so much. You've got so much on your plate, and it's almost as though there are so many expectations and demands of you that it's difficult to know which way to turn, which expectation to try and meet first. It's as though the image I have in my mind is of a bird in a nest with all of these chicks that want to be fed, and they're all just demanding of the mother that they want food, they're hungry, and the mother's trying to satisfy everybody. So I'm not saying that your circumstances are necessarily related to children or kids, but this is the image I get, that everybody seems to want and need something from you, and you're at the center of everybody, and that's a very challenging and, let's face it, exhausting position to be in. So I feel that you have to start pushing back on some of these people that have all of these expectations of you, and you really need to give them the message that you're not just available to take on everything, that you already have a lot on your plate, that you need help yourself, that people around you have got to start helping themselves rather than asking you to deal with their challenges. So this is what I see, but I'm very sure that in a few months there's far more balance, far more calm in your life. But I do feel that you've got to be the driving force. You have to create time and space for yourself. You have to be able to breathe. You have to bring more harmony and peace into your life. And a lot of that is about taking some energy and time back for yourself and pushing back on other people that have expectations of you. So I feel if you can do that, if you can be proactive, in a few months you'll find that life is far calmer. But you see, you also have this tendency to fix things for people, to rescue and help. And that's all well and good, but at some point we grow resentful and we get worn out. So I feel from my guides that these are the things that you've really got to reflect upon, and these are some of the actions that you need to take. Does that make sense to you?
That's my two daughters. She's wanting me to do this and that for them, and I ain't got no life.
I know, you see. It's as though you're being eaten alive, really. As I said, that image of the mother bird with the chicks, really, the chicks just want. They want this, they want that. They just want to be taken care of. And the mother bird is just giving, giving, giving. And after time, that's not feasible. So you have to start pushing back. And you have to teach them that they need to take responsibility for themselves, that it's healthy for them to do that. And, you know, they're your kids. You want to be there for them. You want to help them, but you have to be in good shape as well. And you need to start taking some time back for yourself. It's very important. You're important too, and you need to say to them, I'm important too. And these are some things that I need. So perhaps you can barter with them a little. You know, you need this, then okay. If you can help me with that, I will help you with your request. But it's a two-way street, and I'm important too. That's what you need to do. Okay?
Okay, I appreciate it a lot. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Wish you lots of luck.
Thank you.
It's interesting, Nonna, that so many of our callers, particularly the moms, are trying to meet everybody's needs and demands and often forgetting themselves. Do you find that a lot with your clients?
Yes, totally. It's really hard to be a giver and have boundaries, good, healthy boundaries. And I think also a lot of times people get very addicted to helping others, but sometimes it's a way to avoid one's own emotions. In other words, if I'm sad and I don't want to face my sadness, I can feel better by helping someone else because it looks really good to be of service. So it's a very tough balance to find out, am I really helping someone for healthy reasons, or am I helping them so I don't have to feel my own feelings, or am I helping someone to feel better about myself?
Yeah.
So it's a human condition, I think.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And we have another caller for you, actually, Nonna, from Florida this time.
Good. Okay. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What's your name?
Oh, my name is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Do you have a question for me?
I do. I am wondering when you see me, like, relocating, moving house.
It actually feels to me like it's coming up a little bit more quickly than perhaps you're almost ready for. It feels like at the last minute there's going to be some changes. Some changes that happen that will push the relocation forward. So it's feeling to me like maybe the last week of September, the first week of October for you.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, but get ready because it will catch you by surprise because there's some delays going on, and then all of a sudden everything is going to move around and the doors will open. So I would say, start preparing for it now and pretend that it is going to happen sooner rather than later. Another thing I would say to you also is that do look into, think about getting rid of more than perhaps you were thinking getting rid of. You will do better to hang on to the things that have sentimental value for you and let go of some of the other things and kind of get new stuff, sort of like a new beginning for you. I think you've been playing around with that idea, and I would just encourage you to do that. I think it will be a refreshing change for you to do that. And I think sometimes you're thinking, and that's not very practical, I shouldn't do that. But I think emotionally it would be very a very good change for you to do that. If you ponder that a little bit and feel that feels right, I think it would work out for you really, really well. In other words, it won't be a big financial mistake to do that. I think, in fact, it will financially also be a better decision for you as well as emotionally. So any other questions about this move or what's coming up?
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to know that I'm moving.
Yeah. Anything else I can help you with?
I mean, like, the finances are going to fall into place for the move, too. You kind of mentioned finances, so.
It feels like with the relocation that you're actually going to feel like you're sort of getting in over your head. But, again, there's a lot of strange miracles that feel like they're coming in with this where things you're expecting us to pay a lot of money for, you're going to find solutions that are not going to be very expensive, and it's going to end up pleasantly surprising you how easily all of this goes, because it is a good move for you. I will say this to you, that the relocation, once you're there, emotionally, it will be a little challenging to be in a kind of a new area. So in other words, everything's going to happen well for you to move, and it's going to go, wow, this move is meant to be. It all feels good. And then once you get there, there's going to be a little bit of learning and adjusting going on for you. And you might feel a little bit on some bad days like, oh, my God, this was a mistake and this is harder than I thought. But it's not going to be hard. It's just going to be more of a shock than you were expecting. Sometimes,
yeah, that's how I get when I move.
Stay in touch with friends, do talk to people, do get support, do cry, you know, every once in a while about it, because even good change is hard sometimes. You know, we get married and it's wonderful, and we wake up crying because we don't live alone anymore, and it's different. It's just so different. So that will not last very long. Ultimately, this is a really excellent move for you, and I don't foresee any problems with it at all. And I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised by what falls into your lap to make this happen.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's a very good time. And
thank you.
So, okay, great. Anything else?
Thank you. No, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Just a reminder to everybody that we're only able to take one question per caller. We have a lot of people calling, so please just give us your one question and understand that we can't go on to additional questions. We want to try and get through as many people as we can. Okay, let's see. Who's calling now? Well, we have a caller for me from New Jersey. Who's calling from New Jersey?
Marilyn.
Your name is Carolyn?
Yes.
Hello, Carolyn. How are you doing?
Hi, good. I was calling to see if you see marriage for me.
If I see marriage for you, let me see, Carolyn. Let me see.
I had a divorce in May. I had a breakup last week with a boyfriend, so now I'm like single.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm looking at the cards, actually, and I can see that you've had a breakup, and it was a tough breakup. It wasn't just an easy or straightforward breakup. I can see that even before the breakup, there was quite a lot of upset for you. So you've had you've been quite drained of energy, you know. You've been feeling quite down. It's been a tough time, and I feel it's even affected your sleep and your energy levels, which is to be expected. So really now it's time for you to heal. And I can tell you from my experiences of relationships, when I decided to really focus on myself, to create a great life for myself and a wonderful relationship with myself, accepting, in fact, that ultimately we're okay as we are, we're complete as we are, that we don't need somebody to complete us. And if we have that feeling or idea, then often we'll actually manifest or magnetize a relationship that reinforces that feeling. So it's time for you to heal. It's time for you to focus on yourself. It's time for you to build up your self-esteem and to create a life and routine that's really enjoyable for you. I do feel that you will have a relationship in the future. I do feel that you will settle down. Do I feel it's on the doorstep? Do I feel it's around the corner? No, I feel it's a couple of years away. But I feel that from my guides, you really need that time. Right, you really need that time to focus on yourself. And the more you focus on yourself, the more you build yourself up and really learn to appreciate how wonderful you are, how much you have to offer, then the more you will get clarity about the kind of partner you want and the kind of relationship that you want. And you'll develop an appreciation that anything less is just not really worth it. It's got to be wonderful. It's got to add to your high self-esteem, your excitement about your life. And when you meet a partner that does add to your life that way and you add to theirs, then that's just wonderful. So I feel it's a couple of years away. But that doesn't mean you don't date in the meantime. I just feel you need a couple of years before you settle for the long term. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay, so, it won't be, if I do get married again, it won't be somebody from my past. It'll be somebody new, nobody from the past.
I feel it's somebody new. I feel it's somebody new. I do feel that you'll hear from a partner that's from the past. But I don't feel that you'll choose to get into a relationship with that person. I feel that it will be somebody else.
Okay.
And it's time to move forward, to walk forward, and to create what you really want to create. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, because it seems like, that I've been coming across somebody, I can't explain it. It's just like, I feel like I don't know, I have more self-esteem for myself or something. I don't know what it is.
You need to rest. You've had a stressful time. It's not just been a breakup. It's been a real emotional drain. And you need to relax. You need to do the things you enjoy that build you up, make you feel good about each day. You need to take good care of yourself, getting you rest, getting you sleep, eating well, and enjoying life. And you'll find that if you do that, you'll build back up your energy levels and you'll feel much better about yourself and the world around you. And the more you do that, the more quickly you'll see that things around you change.
Okay, good. All right,
okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Wish you lots of luck. Okay, let me see. Nona, you have a reading now from Massachusetts.
Hello, Massachusetts. What's your name?
My name is Stevenson.
Okay. How can I help you?
I'm seeking employment. Do you see me getting a job in the near future?
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit tough. I think that you will get a job rather quickly. I think you're going to accept a job rather quickly. Probably it actually feels like end of August, beginning of September, but also to tell you, this job is not going to last. So just see how that goes. But I think that it's going to be a job. There's going to be like a probationary period, and it's not going to work out for you. And then after that, there'll be another job for you in March, and that will be a very good situation for you. It feels to me there's something that you need to learn in this first job. It feels like there's going to be somebody there who's not going to treat you well, who will be a very bad communicator, will give you mixed messages. And
there's a lesson there for you to learn about not blaming yourself when somebody gives you mixed messages, but instead that you start trusting your intuition more when somebody gives you a like a crazy message that doesn't make sense. Sometimes in the past, you have blamed yourself for not understanding a situation. And this little first job that's not going to work out will be a short lesson for you of getting your confidence back, that when people aren't clear communicators, it's not your fault, and there's nothing you can do to change that, that it's just not you, and that you have to learn to let the blame lay with the right person. In other words, if somebody else is doing it wrong, that's their problem. So I just wanted to give you a focus on that so you don't go through that first job thinking you're doing something wrong, blaming yourself, and trying to make yourself be better. Because sometimes you take all the blame when other people are doing behaviors that aren't good or appropriate or sane. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So that'll be like just a little class in trust yourself and trust your perceptions, that when the other person talks crazy and contradicts themselves and doesn't make sense, you just go, wow, this person's, you know, just not good at communicating. And thank your lucky stars when you move on from that job, because if you stayed there, it would make you cuckoo. So it'll be a good thing. So it's a little bit of a bumpy road, but it doesn't feel like anything really, really bad. It's just a little bit of a bumpy road. And then the next job that you get, you're going to like it quite a bit, and you're going to be working with some really, really good people, that you're very articulate, you're very clear, you're very smart, and you'll be working with people who are similar to you. And that will make the job very enjoyable for you. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Thank you, Nona. Okay. Let me see. Now, we have another caller. I'll take this call, but this is the last call that we're going to take, I'm afraid. We're out of time almost. So I'm sorry if you didn't get through. Please do call us again next week. We're here every week, as you know, 8 to 10 Eastern time. But this caller is from, let me see, I've lost track, Maryland. Who's calling from Maryland?
This is Chriselda.
Your name is Chriselda.
Yes.
Chriselda, how are you?
I don't know. Can you hear me properly?
I can hear you. Yes, Chriselda. How can we help you?
I was calling. I've actually called before on your show prior, and actually everything that you have told me was correct, like right hit on the nail. And I want to thank you for all the advice and everything that you've given me. It actually helped.
Thank you.
But my concern right now is I have a medical condition, and the doctors cannot seem to find out what's going on with me, and it's debilitating to the point where sometimes I can't walk.
Gosh. Okay. Well, let me say first of all, you know, I'm a metaphysician, and I use metaphysical tools for a living, and people often say to me, well, Steve, when it comes to your health, do you just look at it metaphysically? And I always say, no, I go to the doctor like everybody else does. I go to a medical expert, but I do also gather metaphysical insight that's helpful for me, because it can indicate which areas of my body are stronger than others, that kind of thing. But you know, when it comes to health, you've got to go to the medical experts. I do get a strong feeling from you that there's a lot of underlying stress, and I feel that I feel that there's confusion about your health, because some things are difficult to decipher. And, you know, stress can do so many things to us. I remember when I was in the corporate world, I had an enormous amount of stress, and I was getting all kinds of strange aches and pains in my body and joint pains. And I, too, collapsed to the floor one day. My legs just gave in beneath me. It was as though the energy, the life force was just switched off for a moment. And I was just drained. I was exhausted and I was unhappy with my work. It wasn't energizing me or stimulating me. It was just draining me. And so I'm not saying that this is the only issue with you, but I do feel that you have a lot of underlying stress. And the more you are able to eliminate those underlying stress factors, the more you build yourself up, the stronger you will feel. Now, I feel intuitively that there is almost an energy management issue. So we are electromagnetic. We function, we interact with the soul through electromagnetism. So you have your physical body here on the earth. You have to have it to exist here on this plane, this physical plane. We have to have a physical body. And people think that that's it. And they'll say, well, when I go to spirit, and I'll often say, but you're already in spirit. Your soul is not here on the earth plane. Your soul is not inside your physical body, or it is not in your human brain. The human brain is a tool. So we're constantly interacting with the soul, and we do that through electromagnetism, as I said. That's the positive masculine energy of the sun and the receptive feminine energy of the moon. So there's a lot going on electromagnetically, and I don't think that this is well understood in society generally. So I feel that you're being drained partly by stress, but I feel also that you've got these sort of electromagnetic or energetic drains. Now, how good are you at protecting yourself psychically? And before you answer the question, I'll say to you that protecting oneself psychically, in my opinion, involves many things. Getting good sleep, exercising, staying optimistic, feeling good about oneself so that our energy is high, eating really well, really wonderful foods that give us great energy rather than slowing us down, having good relationships, and doing what we enjoy in life so that we feel strengthened each day by our activities and our work rather than weakened. So there are other practices as well, such as praying and, you know, crystals and smudging and things like that, that can be very beneficial. But how well protected are you psychically?
I can say I'm just hanging in there.
Yeah, and that's not enough.
Yeah.
How happy are you, or how energized and strengthened are you by your work and your day-to-day activities?
Well, right now I'm out of work because I can't really walk in my shoes, so to speak. My job was being an exotic dancer, so now, you know, I can't literally stay 5-10 minutes in heels. So that's really taken me, because it took a financial finances. I took a financial hit, and now I'm out of work. But I mean, other than the kids around the house, I mean, I'm upbeat. Sometimes I have my good days, and then I have my bad days. And it's really been on a bad day week this week.
Okay. You've really got to find ways to make yourself feel more excited about each day. Plan. I know it's difficult when you've got kids, but you've got to plan in time for things that strengthen you. So if you enjoy reading, read. If you like cats, get a cat. If you like doing yoga, do yoga. If you like meditating, do meditation. Do the things that make you feel good. The things that make you feel good will make you feel a lot better. And avoid discord. Avoid the things that are challenging or that drag you down. But I also think that breathing techniques are really important for you, because they're very important in managing our electromagnetic energy. But I feel in the longer term, you need to find a way to make a living that really is what you enjoy. And that's no judgment at all about what you were doing, but at all. What I'm saying to you is whatever it is you choose to do in future, make sure that you really enjoy it, that you really love it, that that's what you want to be doing. And if it's what you were doing before, then that's just fine. But make sure that you really get a kick out of your work, your role in the world, because that is really important when it comes to maintaining and building vitality as well. I do feel that by October your health will be better, but you have to be persistent with your doctors and make sure that you push them so that all different possibilities are considered. But I feel that you'll see improvement in the next few months. Okay.
Okay, yeah, because my main concern was, like, were they going to find out what was wrong with me? Or, because my problem is that, like, I can't really walk too much. Like, I can't do too much because of my feet.
I feel that they will, but I don't feel that they will straight away. I feel like you've got to be really persistent. And I feel that at the same time, you've got to take some of the advice I've given you about making yourself feel better, making yourself feel more vibrant, more optimistic. And I feel that your health improves as you do that, but you've got to keep pushing your doctors. I feel that in 3 months, 4 months, you'll have a much better understanding of what's going on. But it doesn't feel to me that it will be understood straight away. Okay?
Okay, it's one of those. All right, then.
All right, we wish you lots of luck.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of another great show. I want to thank my colleague Nona Marie for giving such wonderful readings and giving us her input after the interview as well. I want to thank Maureen and Stephen, who can't be with us this evening, but they're with us in spirit and they'll be with us again next week. And thank you to Doug, who keeps us on track, running smoothly behind the scenes as our executive producer. And I want to encourage you to tune in next week, same time, 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock Eastern time, and tell your friends to join us. Send the information out on Facebook, etc. We'll have another great show planned for you. And on that note, we wish you a wonderful holiday weekend.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.